This is Broadway to Brazil, the remarkable story of Corinthian Casuals, the English non-league club who took football to the world.
It's some 10 minutes before kickoff at the Egri Erbstein tournament final, and the Corinthian Casuals Brazilian contingent is doing what it does best, making a racket. We're here on final day with the Casuals awaiting an intriguing matchup against Sheffield FC, the world's first and oldest football club. The original Casuals FC last played Sheffield in 1894, making it 128 years since these clubs met. Corinthians had booked their place in the main event after beating Hilltop FC in their semi-final. Although Hilltop, a side made up largely of British Somalians, earned plenty of admirers through their silky play, the Casuals eventually put the game to bed in the dying minutes, with Misha Jamali wrapping up the scoring. In the day's other semi-final, Hungarian visitors Bock failed to get going in their tie against the physically dominant Sheffield, who ruthlessly took advantage of some evident nerves among the Bock players. After nabbing an early goal, Sheffield went on to add six more, with the score finishing 7-0. The following day kicked off with Hilltop against Bock in the third-place playoff. The Hungarians arrived, determined to give a better account of themselves, and were very successful in doing so, particularly when they took a first-half lead via a smart finish from Patrick Shaparki. However, Hilltop came back strong, and after Box defenders somehow heroically denied them on the goal line on multiple occasions, they eventually equalised in the last 10 minutes through a cleverly placed direct free kick. The match went to a penalty shootout, and Bock eventually succumbed to four perfect Hilltop penalties, losing 4-3. This just left the destiny of the Corinthian Cup to be decided. But before the final between Casuals and Sheffield kicked off, I had the opportunity to catch up with an old Corinthian who was here to help with the medal presentations. He's also a friend of the podcast, having been interviewed in Series 1. It's Sky Sports commentator Martin Tyler. Martin Tyler, thanks so much for joining us on Broadway to Brazil, our Corinthian Casuals podcast. I'd just like to get a sense of what brought you down here to the Egri Erbstein tournament.
Well, I heard the great Dominic Bliss on TalkSport promoting it. Slightly irked me a little bit because he said Corinthian Casuals having their best spell ever in their history, and as a former player I challenged that, the not so much perhaps my era but an era around the time where they got to Wembley and lost the final in the end, played at Wembley in the 50s with Mickey Stewart playing or not playing because he was supposed to get back in time for the game and didn't. No, it's a club very close to my heart because I had 5 years as a wannabe player. I did play in the first team a bit, and we weren't very successful, but the level was very good. There was no conference then, National League then. It was the top non-league really in this part of the world. So I played with some good players. I played against a lot of very good players, some of whom I ended up commentating on when I moved from being on the pitch to being on the gantry. So when Dominic said the date was fine, I'm helping at Dartford. Alan Dowson's a manager I've worked with at five different clubs now. We played Boreham Wood yesterday, so I couldn't come yesterday. But I knew today was free, and what a lovely day and what a great competition this is. The history of it is phenomenal. I can only congratulate Dominic in bringing a story that should be told much wider than it obviously was before.
I was going to ask, were you familiar with the Egri Erbstein story before Dom sort of started investigating it in his book?
I was familiar with the crash, and not those particularly who perished in the crash. And when he told me that the book was coming out, I obviously wanted to get it, and I recommend it to anybody. It's a fantastic read, very, in a way, tear-jerking, really. But now, all these years later, those whose families have had to suffer so much from that must be delighted that it's being remembered and recalled, and this tournament, which must take a huge amount of organising, is a great tribute to obviously a great coach who was taken from us far too young.
And you join me now between third place playoff and the final between Corinthian Casuals and Sheffield. Just seen the Sheffield players lining past us as we're talking. The third place playoff was good entertainment, wasn't it?
It was very good because I understand the Hungarian team didn't quite do themselves justice yesterday. And they were so close to winning the bronze medal, if you like. But football is very, I think it's very realistic. Some people would say cruel, but I think the Somali team certainly deserved a share of the spoils and the penalty shootout. And that's the lottery, isn't it? And they were maybe just getting that equaliser just gave them a little bit more spring against a team that had just lost an equalising goal.
You alluded to your playing days here at the Casuals, and it was before they moved here to Tolworth, before they had the infrastructure of the ground and everything. What's it like coming back and seeing the club where it is today?
It's great. I mean, the one thing that was missing in those years when I was involved, when Mickey Stewart was the manager, who didn't always pick me, I'm going to take issue with him again. Well, I must tell you a quick story about Mickey. That I was offered a job in television at the time of we were doing pre-season in 1973, and I turned it down. I was a freelance journalist and I was doing pre-season and I wanted to play. And then Jimmy Hill, who obviously has been connected to this club, was a great man, and I was doing some work with him, and I told him I'd been offered this job and turned it down, and he looked at me as if I was a madman, and his words were, "You must take the job. You never know where it's going to lead to, and we know where it's led to, and I'm a very lucky person." So I had to go and tell Mickey that I wasn't playing, and we were training at the Oval with Mickey's connections, and on the steps of the Oval, and I was up there watching Surrey the other week, and I pointed to a member of my family and said, "This is where it happened." I went to Mickey and said, "Look, I know we start next week, but I don't think I'm going to be able to play. I've got a job in television." Had he said, "No, no, you've worked hard in pre-season, you'll be playing next week," I would not have taken the job in television. He said, "Good luck, son." Shook my hand, and that was the end of my Corinthian Casuals playing career. Although I did play one more game when Steve Hamer was manager, and it was a game at Tooting and Mitcham, the ground that we shared then, and they were playing Cambridge University midweek, and I was having my supper at home in Streatham, and Steve and I were good friends and had played together, and he rang me up and said, "We're one short, we're playing Cambridge University, kick off 7:30, get yourself down here." And I did, and I really enjoyed it, but there was no scope for a comeback. Thankfully, Corinthian Casuals survived that. They wouldn't have welcomed me back, I don't think. So I had a lovely time, and I didn't need to think twice about the opportunity to come here today, and I would congratulate everybody involved, and maybe that Corinthian Casuals will win a trophy. By the time people are listening to this, we'll know the answer to that, but I wish them well, and I'm delighted they're in the final.
And just finally, I mean, you're well known, of course, for your commentary on the Premier League, and that's how a lot of people may associate you. People may be less aware of is your connection to non-league with Hampton and Richmond and obviously your playing days. And this tournament, of course, is celebrating semi-professional and amateur clubs. Why do you think this level is important for the English game?
I think any other country in the world will be jealous of it. When I was playing in the Isthmian League, there was no relegation. The pyramid hadn't been put into place. But since it has been put into place, it's been, I think, a wonderfully democratic part of the world's greatest game. I went to watch Woking in 1953, and so my non-league roots were planted very, very early. And then I ended up, obviously, playing, commentated on plenty of non-league games in the FA Cup, some really exciting, including Woking winning at Millwall, which was one I was, I think, only after the final whistle where I was allowed to show a little bit of extra enthusiasm for it.
Our producer Brent is just taking a photo. He's a Millwall fan, so it's a good timing.
Point. He's walked away very quickly at that point. Yeah, there was a goal scored by the great Clive Walker, and we did show it live on Sky Sports. But I think the coaching side came from absolutely nothing. I had no ambitions to be a coach, but my son was playing at Cobham, and they were short of somebody to actually do some coaching. Alan Dowson was a player at Walton and Hersham, who came and took the sessions on a Thursday evening, and I was the only dad available at 5:30 on a Thursday evening to help out. Anyway, we became friends. He got the Walton and Hersham manager's job, and he said, "Would you like to come and join me?" And I thought he meant as a media officer, as he would, because I'm a television journalist, if you like, and commentator. But he said, "Come and coach. You've played at this sort of level." And I went for like 2 weeks, and here we are at a fifth different club 17 years later. So I got the bug quite quickly, and there was no face mask to protect me from it, I don't think, so I'm still stricken with it. And we're at Dartford now, after, I think we had, you mentioned Hampton, we had 6 years at Kingstonian, 4 years at Hampton, almost 4 years at Woking, and now we're trying to see what we can do at the southern part of the M25. So, it's fun, and I go when I can. Obviously, work is the most important thing. I'm a commentator first and foremost, and hope I can continue to be that. Obviously, as you get older, you know, people ask questions of you maybe, but I love doing it still, and I've just signed another one-year deal with Sky, so I'm off and ready to go. But the love of football is what has sustained that, and the love of football includes all football, you know? And I don't really differentiate between being here and being at Crystal Palace, Arsenal. The only difference, you're holding the microphone today, and on Friday week, I'll be holding it. And, you know, we all share it. It's the love of the game, and it transcends countries, it transcends race, it transcends gender. It's just a fantastic game, and, you know, mine's been a one-dimensional life, really, in football, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah, very, very appropriate words, considering we're here with a Hungarian team, a British-Somalian team, you know, absolutely. Are you brave enough to make a prediction for the final?
No, I never make predictions, because I say my job is to shout goal, although not today. I will applaud a goal, for sure, and I let the Gary Nevilles and Jamie Carriers of this world decide what's going to happen, and then we see football's football. The only thing I've ever felt about it is I hope the team that deserved to win wins. I think we do see some injustice in football, but they've got a great chance, but I gather Sheffield were very good yesterday. And one or two of the foreign guests thought that Corinthian Cash was playing Sheffield United. We've been able to put them right on that score, but from what Sheffield FC delivered yesterday, I would imagine one or two of the players might have played for Sheffield United in the past. We'll see, but absolutely. Looking forward to it. I know their history, but I've never seen them play, so it's a first for me, even at this grand old age. You know?
Yeah, it's a team with more history than Sheffield United, in fact.
And Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah.
And Sheffield Wednesday, indeed. Yeah. Just the music comes on, that's our cue to end the interview. Thank you so much, Martin.
Pleasure, absolute pleasure.
And so, come the late afternoon, the Casuals kicked off against Sheffield, and immediately the tie had a more pronounced intensity than the semi-finals. As Fiel Londres provided an energetic soundtrack, the two teams struggled to break each other down. Indeed, the scores were still goalless when the Casuals lost a try list to two yellow cards late in the second half. With tempers occasionally boiling over, Sheffield then delivered a sucker punch in the closing moments of the game. A well-delivered corner was nodded in by Connor Cutts in the 88th minute, and Sheffield FC went on to lift the trophy. Having won the very first Egri-Erbstein tournament through a late goal in 2019, the Corinthian Casuals now found themselves on the other end of late drama. This denied the Casuals' new manager Tony Reid the chance to start his reign with some silverware. I caught up with the new boss to get his take on the side's performance, but first I wanted to know how he was settling into life at King George's.
I'm enjoying it, but there's a lot of work still to do, and I know and I realise the amount of phone calls that I do. And I've always said, football manager, regardless of the level, it is like a full-time job. So it's just having that balance between the main job and doing this job, especially voluntarily. But the reason why I do it, because I love it, so I'm not going to take anything away from that. I probably do enjoy the chase and chasing people down. You've got to look for people. But I'm probably privileged to have a good range of friends in the industry that I think made it a little bit slightly easier as well, me being at step three. I think they send you more players, and when they send you more players, there's always that catchment of one of them might be a gem. So you have to kind of intend to look at players. Some of them, obviously, when they call you on their own behalf and everything, it's like, oh, where have you played? And, you know, you get the same sort of answers from them. Last year I was out injured. Okay, you're not for me. But listen, still enjoying it. Know there's work to do. I'm not going to take anything away from my vision and what I want, so I will get there.
Yeah, I mean, your job right now presumably is about narrowing down a list of try lists down to your first team squad, is that right?
Yeah, today you evidently showed I didn't make wholesale changes. We had 25, probably used about 16 of them today. obviously we've got a game against Farnborough. I'm now going to whittle it down again. So the boys that virtually started today will probably all be included in the squad. But saying that, I do have at least 5 to 6 first teamers out, you know, with injuries, which is a shame. And when you miss those sort of characters, it does have an impact on your squad. So you have to, again, balance it by keeping those trialists around just for the numbers. And it may sound bad, but unfortunately, I have to be cute with it.
Of course. Yeah, yeah, you're the boss. That's what they, I would say that's why you get paid the big bucks, but no one does around here. But in terms of the club itself, Crinthy Casuals, it's a unique club, isn't it? And, you know, a tournament like this, I guess, is a showcase for why.
Yeah. Wow. Like, listening to, for the last 2 days, the fans have been superb. Drums banging, singing, putting the keeper off, which totally worked. They gave him a Lotus jip like that. So I'm really rushing and looking forward to the season, because obviously we want to make this home ground your fortress, and I need them to be my 13th and 12th man as well. Obviously giving players stick, giving a goalkeeper stick, putting them off their game kind of makes it a bit easier. I will get it right on the pitch, and once we get it right, it will then coincide what the fans are doing as well, which is brilliant.
And in terms of the tournament, these 2 days, obviously not the result we wanted at the end there, but how do you reflect on the performances in the 2 games?
I think yesterday, even though we won 2-0, I think we were really bad in performance-wise, weren't playing the kind of way we played. You know, in hot weathers, you're going to play it from the back, you're not going to be direct because you're going to be doing a lot of running. So can you try and keep the tempo by controlling the game? Today, I felt we was well controlled. I think the 2 bookings, that killed us, obviously, when he went off, because we were in the game, controlling the game, we're creating the better chances, then that happened. And that probably, that's the sucker punch.
In terms of looking forward to the season, how would you describe a Tony Reid team? How are you looking for your teams to play?
Aggressive, on the front foot. And obviously, you're not going to win every single game in this league. You're going to have to be tactical aware of what oppositions are bringing to yourself as well. You know, but I want to surprise them, but I know I'm probably 2 to 3 players short. But it doesn't help when you have 6 players out as well injured. But as you can see, the structure is there. We're still working on the formation. Now we're moving on to probably the second and first stages, such as set pieces, pattern of play, how we want them to play, interchanging, everything. Now we have to put that together. But you can't put that together with key players that's missing as well. It's like putting trialists into that area, hoping that they can do your job until then. And as you know, when you don't have the financial resources, you have to bring in a few youngsters, and the youngsters will oblige to take the opportunity because they're going to get that opportunity to play. So it's down to themselves to take that platform. But I think once we start, we need to be ready to go and put teams on the back foot.
And in terms of aims, targets, ambitions for the season, is it about staying up, or are you looking beyond that? Do you have a position in mind?
I do have a position in mind, and it's not down in the bottom, that's for sure. And it's not mid-table. I've always been competitive. I am aggressive. I've always been up there challenging. So it's going to be no different to my mentality. So yes, I'm not here to make up the numbers. I'm not here to be the boys who's going to be rolled over and beaten. No, it won't happen like that. We win some, we lose some, we draw. But we're going to be the surprise package.
Lovely stuff. I like that. I like that positive positive end to that, Tony. Thank you so much, mate.
Thank you. Cheers. Much. Cheers. Bye.
The 2022 Igli-Ebstein tournament was undoubtedly a success. Not only were a wide array of visiting fans from near and far entertained by some fantastic football, but friendships were also forged and deepened off the pitch. With that in mind, we'll end our Igli-Ebstein podcast specials with a word for our visiting teams. Congratulations to Sheffield FC, whose tenacious performances ensured they could take the Corinthian Cup up north. It turns out Chairman Richard Timms wasn't just talk. Your personal perspective, what are you most looking forward to about the tournament?
Winning it, of course.
Good man, good man. We also made new friends in the form of Hilltop FC. Not only did they entertain us with a refreshing style of play, but they were also perfect gentlemen on and off the pitch and did their community proud. But the final word should go to BAK, Bok. Having made the journey all the way from Budapest, the Hungarian squad delighted the locals with their enthusiasm, gratitude, and general joyfulness. and in sporting terms, they showed great character to put a tough semi-final behind them and deliver a brilliant third-place playoff performance. After their game, I was able to catch up with one of their players, Peter Becko, in a lively clubhouse. Can you just reflect on your experiences as a BOK player for these last couple of days?
Well, first of all, we would like to thank again for the invitation. It was a really special experience for us, you know, to be here in England with this wonderful atmosphere around Corinthians. We are not used to this super warm atmosphere, and we really, really enjoyed it, in spite of the fact that the first game was not how we planned. But that was a big difference between the two teams, obviously. So we tried to do better on the second game. I think we did well. Unluckily, the opponent equalized and we couldn't win on the penalties. But in spite of all these facts, we really enjoyed it and happy to be here.
Yeah. I mean, I want to congratulate you on that game today, because it was a really entertaining match for us watching. I thought you guys acquitted yourselves really, really well. Obviously, you had a difficult day yesterday. So was today about, you know, restoring a bit of pride?
Indeed. Yeah. Definitely. You got to know that we don't have trainings. That's a big debate now. We won the Hungarian sixth division. Actually, it's the Budapest division. It's like, without a training, we were surprisingly champions, and we didn't have we only had one game in the summer, training game. So I think fitness wise we are not in our best shape, but obviously the opponent tactically and physically was way better on the first game. So yeah, we were happy to do a bit better on the second game. Of course, on the second game we felt that the opponent was superior to us as well. We tried to make it up with teamwork, with, you know, play with heart. We hit the crossbar after that free kick.
There was some incredible defending as well, some clearances off the line.
Yeah.
There were three of those.
There were two super life-saving clearances.
Yes.
And you gotta say that these guys, they just came back after serious injuries. Mm-hmm. So we had three players coming back after serious injuries. They were not in match form, but they traveled here on their own expense, did their best, so maximum respect to all of them.
When I chatted to Bertelan, he spoke about the fact that you guys don't tend to play in front of big crowds very often, where we've had a nice, good attendance for these two games. You've got all the flags in the ground, and even a couple of BOK flags behind the goal. That must be nice for you.
Yeah, I didn't have any experience with like this before. So like even after 7-0, after 7-0 defeat, standing ovation and chanting our team name, it was really, really touching and really just really happy that we could just embrace this experience and with all these nice people. It was truly special. Yeah.
And have you had the opportunity to see a bit of the local area? How long are you here for? Have you sampled some of the pubs and restaurants and whatnot?
Yeah, well, I lived in Southampton for 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
So I just came from Southampton visiting my old landlady. Mm-hmm. So they were cheering for us from Southampton. but yeah, too, I think the most of the team will leave tomorrow. We're going to have a little visit in London, just usual sightseeing.
Yep.
Going to go to Wetherspoon tonight to celebrate a bit, have some pub food.
Yeah, I can see you guys have plenty of pints of Guinness in front of you. I'll let you enjoy your well-deserved drinks. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you.
I'm delighted to report that BOK did not in fact make it to Wetherspoons. In nearby Surbiton, there is a pub that is very special to me and the rest of the Broadway to Brazil team. And so, myself and Dom were delighted when, after heading to the Lamb for a post-tournament debrief, we found it had been taken over by an army of Hungarian footballers. Many, many pints were had, and a slightly ridiculous evening climaxed with a round of Hungarian amateur footballer karaoke, or bokioki if you will. We thank BOK for capturing the spirit of the tournament so perfectly, and we hope to see you all in Sheffield.
Woo!
This episode of Broadway to Brazil was produced, edited and mixed by me, Yarick Zaba. Dominic Bliss is series co-producer, and our title music is by John Forrest. For more on the podcast, head to broadwaytobrazil.com.